From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in just 2 weeks when the New York State legislative session is done. Lawmakers have until June 19th to approve a number of bills, one of which would be the Climate and Community Protection Act. Climate advocates applaud the bill, which would rapidly wean the state off fossil fuels, making New York's economy carbon-free sooner than a lot of experts say, well, they think is doable. And the question is really is, what is feasible here? After describing himself as a climate leader, Governor Andrew Cuomo has said twice this week he does not expect that act to be approved before the session ends. He added it's no longer among his priorities for the session. Yesterday, he told WNYC's Brian Lehrer, quote, "What I don't want to do is give people a political placebo where we put forth dates and goals that we cannot make," end quote. And we're going to hear more of that interview this hour. But climate activists, those who've been working on this, many lawmakers, they disagree with the governor. They say Cuomo's dragging his feet and there is still time to act. And they're worried that the session could end without any significant climate action on the part of state government. They argue the Climate and Community Protection Act is just one example of what could make New York State a leader in climate action. So what does it mean for the immediate and the long-term future of climate in New York? And what should and what can the state do regarding climate policy, especially while one party essentially has complete control of the legislature? They can do largely what they want to do, and we're going to find out a lot in the next couple of weeks. And our guests this hour are going to answer to what the governor was saying yesterday on public radio. Sue Hughes-Smith is with us in studio, environmental educator and founding member of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. We try to moderately change her title every time she's in to keep her on her toes. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me in, Evan.
Nice to have you here. And Mark Dunley is on the phone with us. He's the executive director of the Green Education and Legal Fund. Mark, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Evan, and hello, Susan.
Hey, Mark.
It sounded to me, Mark, like you and I had to think about it. You're well, I guess, physically, but it doesn't sound like you're all that well. Are you frustrated right now, Mark?
Well, certainly frustrated on many levels. Obviously, climate change continues to accelerate. You know, some of the reports you hear coming out of the of the Arctic, where temperatures are 30 degrees above normal, but then you're also looking at the food belt in the Midwest, where the farmers are unable to, plant yet because of the unprecedented floods. That gets you very worried. And then it's very unclear what, if anything, the New York State Legislature and the governor is going to do on climate change, despite having it in front of them for at least, 6 months.
Okay. How do you feel about where things stand, at least on the state level? And we'll get to where we are on the state level in a moment. But Sue, what's the outline here? How are you feeling about this?
Well, very frustrated. I think it was just this week that the governor was admonishing his colleagues for, the need to walk the talk, that you can't call yourself progressive if you're not going to act like a progressive. And if it's a progressive agenda to address climate change, then let's address climate change. I would argue it shouldn't be simply a progressive agenda. It should be everybody's agenda. But since the Democrats are in control of everything and they have been saying they want action on this, then let's see some action.
All right. So let's listen to what the governor had to say yesterday on WNYC's Brian Lehrer, talking about why he is not interested in signing into law this particular bill. It's the Climate and Community Protection Act, but why he thinks some of the broader goals set by many of the people across the country, not just in New York State, he wants people to kind of get their heads around what is feasible, realistic, doable. Let's listen.
What I don't want to do, Brian, is give people a political placebo where we put forth dates and goals that we cannot make. I believe this is the most pressing issue of our time. But I don't want to play politics with it. And I don't want to tell people we can move to a carbon-free economy in a period of time that I know that we can't.
So you're saying 2030 and 2050, those particular benchmarks, are not realistic, in your opinion? You've made that judgment?
I will make, as I said, there are a number of deadlines, and there are nuances on the deadlines. But as aggressively as it can be done, I will favor and I will do it. We are now in the midst of the most aggressive transition in the country. But I don't want to play politics with it. You know, when you talk about this transition for the economy, remember what you're talking about. Fossil fuels, no carbon emissions, no airplanes, no trains that run on diesel, all electric cars, closing all the power plants. This is a massive transformation. And I know the politics now is we can do everything by tomorrow. I have never done that. I've never said to the people of this state, I've never put forth a goal that I don't believe is realistic and that we can't meet. And we have the most realistic goal in the United States of America. If we can do it faster, nobody is going to accuse me of not being aggressive and not trying to move heaven and hell to get things done.
What?
We always have, and that's what we're talking through now with the legislature. But I'm not going to just play politics with it and tell people tomorrow we're going to have a carbon-free economy, because it's not true.
Well, it's when the governor said no one accuses me of not being aggressive on this, it sounded like Brian Lehrer wanted to say about that. But before we get the response of our guests on that, the conversation that Brian Lehrer had on public radio with Governor Cuomo yesterday reminded me of the conversation we had with Congressman Joe Morelli in April on this program. Here's just a small segment of that conversation in which the congressman is also saying he does not see any plan, any feasible way to get this country off of fossil fuels by 2030, for example. Let's listen.
I'd love to have that happen. I'm not sure how realistic it is, because I'm not sure we're even going to get agreement on an infrastructure bill, which you would need to do to be able to make that conversion. So, and it would also, in some people's ideas, would mean that if you couldn't operate a internal combustion engine that uses gasoline within 10 years, again, I don't know if we can make that transition quickly enough. You have a huge automotive industry that relies on making cars, you know, so you have to sort of lay this out in a logical way. And there are many pieces or conditions that have to exist for you to get there. But I think we need to have a plan and start moving in that direction immediately. And I think some proposals like the carbon tax, I think, need to really be discussed and debated in a thoughtful way.
Discussed and debated in a thoughtful way, Sue, on one proposal. But he's saying that's Joe Morelli on the national level. Look, we got a whole auto industry to deal with. We've got infrastructure. We've 2030. I don't see it. You got Governor Andrew Cuomo yesterday saying basically, you know, look, no one's more aggressive than me, but some of the goals set out, not realistic. What's your first response to what you just heard there?
I mean, my first response is that's the same essential argument that's been made since 1988 when James Hansen testified to Congress. You know, if we'd started in 1988, we would have been transitioning all the fossil fuels at something less than 2% a year. Yeah, that would have been great. That would have been calm and, you know, everyone could chill about it. And well, we didn't do that. And every time the political leaders say, well, I don't know if we can set a deadline, or I don't know if we could, you know, stick to that, or I don't know if we can set policies in place, all they're saying is that I'd refuse to create the political conditions necessary to make this transition happen. This is not an economic impossibility. In fact, transitioning our economy from one fuel source to another always grows the economy. This is not a technical impossibility. There are many peer-reviewed journals, studies that have demonstrated that this is technically possible, at least to get very close to zero. And I'm not going to debate zero versus 2% or something like that. But we're far from having those limits. What we have is a political limit, and that's a choice that people make. And I'd like to see our political leaders making different choices and to stop using politics as an excuse for inaction.
Okay. Mark Dunley, you heard. Let's take the governor first. What do you make of his comments on public radio yesterday?
Well, not entirely honest. The reality is he's been governor for 8 years. After those 8 years, and this followed 8 years of other governors also working on climate, New York has a grand total of 4% of its state electricity coming from wind and solar. And, you know, for instance, to hit the governor's, you know, goal of 70% of the state electricity by renewables by 2030, which is actually much stronger than the CCPA's goals, that would mean we'd be adding on that 5% every year, even though we've only managed to add on 4% over almost 15, 16 years. And if he wants to do this based on science, there is a study that was done by Cornell and Stanford professors during the fracking fight. We showed how New York State could get to 100% renewable energy by 2030 without any reliance upon fossil fuels. 2.5 years ago, we got the governor to agree to order the state agency NYSERDA to actually study how fast is it possible to get to 100% clean energy. You know, we didn't give him a date. He had to pick the date. Well, that study has not been released, and now they're saying they won't release it because the economics of renewables is changing so quickly, they worry they'll never be quite up to speed when they release it. And we're saying, you're telling us you don't believe in the science that is possible. Well, why don't you put out the scientist study that was supposed to answer that question and then allow other scientists to weigh in? He's the one we feel is playing politics by, you know, not allowing the studies that he agreed to do, and which he has bragged to the legislature on various hearings to be released. And I agree, you know, we're talking about scientists saying that there's a possibility of the extinction of the human species. Harvard study just came out this week saying there's a good chance that civilization as we know it will not, you know, survive in the foreseeable future. This is a climate emergency. This is not, you know, one of 20 issues that you sort of get to when you get a chance. We need a society-wide mobilization, and Governor Cuomo and the state lawmakers are nowhere close to treating this with the seriousness that it needs. And that's why the young people, you know, are rebelling so much. It's the teenagers saying, you guys, us older people, you're messing up and you're going to leave us a world that we will not be able to survive in. And you guys have had 30 years to try to work on this and you've done very little. It's time to listen to young people and give us a chance for a future.
Mark, you're doing a really good job of self-editing as you speak here, knowing that, you know, you're speaking on live radio. So I appreciate that part of the language editing. Mark Donnelly is Executive Director of the Green Education and Legal Fund. Sue Hughes-Smith from the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. And listeners, if you want to call the program as we talk about what is realistic and what is not, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And you can email the program connections at WXXI.org. So, Mark, Sue, and I'll start with you on this, Mark. Why don't you, you know, whether it's part of the Climate and Community Protection Act or any other proposals you see it, tell me when you're in the room with Cuomo and he says, forget all of my doubts, forget all my concerns, tell me what we need to pass and what's actually on the table that could happen. Right now, before the session ends, before the end of June, June 19th, I'll support it if you tell me to support it. What's it going to be? What are the specific ideas here, Mark? Go ahead.
First, he should take the provisions of the CCPA related to environmental justice and labor standards. It's important to help disadvantaged communities, but it's equally important to convince workers and average people that they're going to benefit from that, and that is where the CCPA is really the strongest. We support the 100% clean energy by 2030, but we actually think a good step, let's start with this 70% renewable electricity by 2030, but put it into law, then go to 100% by 2040. You should, you know, do this study, get the study out. The climate plan that everybody agrees we need to do, we believe needs to be in two-year increments. You know, rather than debate in 2030, 2040 versus 2050, we like to debate what are we going to actually have in 2020, 2021, and 2022. And then those plans need to be updated on either an annual or biannual basis to reflect, you know, what's going on. You need to deal much more with the transportation and buildings. We should not be allowing people to convert, for instance, from oil to natural gas. Natural gas is a problem. We should be, you know, starting to really promote more renewable heat, like air heat pumps and geothermal. Transportation, we should set a short-term goal to move to 100% zero emission vehicles, new ones by, you know, within the next 10 years. That's the deadline that Norway has set. We should require all new buildings to be zero carbon emissions. California has that in place for residential buildings now by 2020 and all buildings by 2030. We should probably look at, you know, 2022. And we should also require local governments, regional, county, or cities to also develop climate action plans. And then the big issue, which we all know is the biggest, perhaps the biggest barrier, we have to deal with the issue of siting of large-scale renewables, because right now it takes you 10 years. We are not going to survive climate change if it takes us 10 years to put into place a solar farm or a wind farm.
All right, Sue Hughes-Smith, what do you see?
I would agree completely with Mark. I mean, to add that we need a statewide ban on any expansion of any fossil fuel project. No more pipelines. We should be setting a time scale to, like Mark say, on small increments, but to not expand gas and actually to contract gas in the building sector would be a good place to start.
Now, Sue, I think, brings up an important historical point here. For those who feel like what we're talking about could be devastating economically, and this comes up a lot, mm-hmm. one of the points you make as an educator is historically, whenever we've changed systems, it's actually been, you say, good for the economy.
Yeah. Yeah, the economies have grown when you switched from wood to coal to oil, oil to mostly gas. That has caused investment and expansion of the economy. And there's no reason that the renewable transition wouldn't be the same. In fact, we see in many measurements that there are also what we call external benefits, right? By switching to renewable energy, you reduce the production of all kinds of pollutants that are bad for health. And so you would get those economic gains as well.
Let me get to Jack in Greece on the phone, who wants to lead us off with a little bit of skepticism. Go ahead, Jack.
Oh, hi, Evan. Thanks so much for taking my call. Yeah, I guess from what I've been able to hear the discussion so far, I'm going to take a opposite position. I think Governor Cuomo has credibility with me, and I'm going to, you know, share why. I think for the best that I could hear so far was the governor kind of saying he wants to have our party, the Democratic Party, line up and support something that's achievable. He mentions eliminating diesel train engines, no internal combustion engine cars within 10 or 11 years. I think the governor's right. I think to say that we can migrate and change our infrastructure at this point, especially when we have a Republican Party. Right now we have a president in the White House that's a climate denier. So we have tremendous obstacles to get there within a 10 or 11 year time period. I think today we have a country like China, which I believe, I'm not sure as just a citizen, I try and keep myself informed, but best I can recall, China has the vast majority of the advanced materials that are required to make the batteries, the new technology batteries, that are required even for a simple change to like a hybrid car or an electric car. So, and right now, you know, China, we got to be honest and say China's an adversary. They're not an ally of the United States. So they could easily say in their self-interest, they want to keep that technology and not sell it to us because of whatever policies we adapt or whatever happens in the future. I think the governor, in my mind, has credibility. And also, not to go back to a different subject, but I think the governor was very honest when he called out the Democratic Party when our own parties couldn't stand together and bring Amazon into Queens, where we had 25 or 50,000 jobs that were lost in a state like ours that needs jobs. And so I think the governor, in my mind, governor has credibility. I believe he's looking for growth for the state. And in my mind, I think it sounds like he's given us quite a bit of thought. And, you know, he's standing up and saying, I disagree. And I like that.
All right,
so
Jack,
that's what I got. Thanks, Evan.
Jack, thanks for the phone call. Mark Dunley, first up. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, the science we had to look at is the science of climate change. And one can say, listen, let's be reasonable and take 30 years, 40 years to do it. But if you take that 30 to 40 years and you get to the catastrophic point, which the scientists increasingly say is 1.5 degrees, and we're already at almost 1 degrees, it doesn't do us any good. And, you know, the IPCC, you know, said we had to lower the targets. A lot of the climate policy that Governor Cuomo puts on the table hopes to keep us at 2 degrees centigrade global warming. The IPCC said, no, we need to be trying to keep it at 1.5 degrees. But you also got to remember the IPCC has been wrong every single time on every report that they have put out. They've underestimated the speed and severity of climate change, partly because of the nature of scientists and how they make, you know, conclusions and recommendations, but also because for the IPCC to put out a report, they need to get approval from countries like Saudi Arabia, Russia, China, and the United States, who watered down their recommendation. As one IPCC scientist author says, if you really want to know what's realistic, take our worst-case scenario and double it. We don't have time when we're talking about extinction of the human species. We need the type of mobilization that we saw after Pearl Harbor was bombed, where we redirected our economy in a 6 month, you know, period to build tanks and, you know, other things to, you know, for the war. We need that same type of ramping up. And when after 8 years of Governor Cuomo, he's only added maybe 1 or 2% of renewables to the state electricity grid, that is not adequate. We're quite aware that this is going to be an incredibly difficult task to take. But, you know, back to the point that Sue said about, benefits to the economy, one of the barriers actually to the transition to renewable energy is finding enough workers. For instance, the Jacobson report and how we get to 100% renewable energy by 2030 talked about we would have 4 to 5 million, you know, temporary jobs being created, several hundred thousand more permanent jobs once the infrastructure is built. But this is going to take a lot of workers. This is a full employment program. We know how to do it. It's going to lower electric bills. It's going to reduce the 3,000 to 10,000 people who die annually in New York from air pollution. Electric cars are much cheaper to maintain. Probably within 3-4 years, electric cars will be cheaper to even buy than regular cars. This is a win-win-win for everybody other than the fossil fuel executives.
Well, and Sue, you know, to your point about the change of economy and what that means, you know, I talk to a number of people who say, I just can't even picture a world in which we're not rolling up to gas stations. People are buying cars right now. I have a friend who was thinking about buying a car and was like, is this going to be the, like, do I need to think about whether or not I'm going to be able to pump gas toward the end of this, the life of this car? Because nobody buys a car wanting it to last 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting time. But they're having a hard time envisioning this. And what Jack is saying is it just sounds like the governor's the one who's realistic here.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think we have, as Mark's kind of pointing out, there's an enormous disconnect in people's minds. So, sure, what the governor is saying sounds realistic, and I think it's because most people cannot envision where we have to go and what's the path to getting there. So, you know, maybe the thing to do is to just take a second and envision what that world looks like. For me, living in Rochester, here's some good news. 91% of our electricity is generated with no carbon emissions. 91% of our electric grid is carbon free. Wow, at 9% left, that seems pretty doable. So then you're saying, well, now my house needs to run not off of a furnace that burns something, but off of a heat pump. That technology exists, and it's actually pretty good technology. And for some people, there's going to be a cost barrier. For many people, there's a cost barrier. And that's a political decision on how we solve that cost barrier. But there's also a knowledge gap. So those are things that we can address. It's not that we can't do it. It's that we need to know that we need to do it. And we need policies and incentives to help us achieve it. Transportation, I think, as Mark's indicating, is the easier piece of it. The economics are going to shift. Oh, that's what Bloomberg is predicting, and others are predicting that those shifts are going to change, that are going to make it more economical to purchase the electric car. car fleets tend to turn over the bulk of them within a 12-year time frame. So, yeah, you can envision within 12 years most cars, let's hope most vehicles on the road, are tailpipe free. I look forward to that as someone who walks down the street. I can't wait for every bus that goes past me to be an electric bus.
Hey, Mark Dunley, before we get our only break of the hour, and I will also say, listeners, if you're on the phone, we have a lot of feedback already. We're going to get through a lot of your feedback in our second half hour as we talk about what is possible and what's not, especially on the state level. 2 weeks left in the legislative session. What do you want people to do? What do you want citizens to do in the next 2 weeks, Mark?
Well, we want them to call the governor's office, and we want them to call their own state legislators and state assembly members to say, get the strongest climate legislation possible. Our hope is that the governor, by saying, oh, we're not going to get the climate legislation done, is just using that as a negotiation point to get the assembly to agree to a couple of things that he wants. But there's also the reality, for the last 30 years, pretty much everything on climate and energy has been done administratively by the governor. Legislature's really not had any role, part because they've been in gridlock. So he's sort of feeling, well, you don't have to do anything. I can just do everything after session. It would be much better to put, you know, a number of these provisions into law. And also, which so far they've been resistant, is to give citizens the right to sue if they fail to actually implement the laws that are put in place on climate. They've done this in California, giving citizens the right to sue on their climate program. And so, for instance, California has a similar goal to us, to go to 50% renewables for electricity by 2030. They're going to hit that 50% next year.
Mark Dunley on the line with us, the Executive Director of the Green Education and Legal Fund, and Sue Hugh Smith from the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. Your phone calls on the other side of this break. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, a conversation about the opioid epidemic. We're joined by Dr. Rahul Gupta, former Public Health Commissioner for West Virginia, which has the highest age-adjusted rate of drug overdose deaths involving opioids. He's now the Chief Medical and Health Officer for the March of Dimes. We talked to him about his work on treating addiction and how he thinks the medical system should change to help alleviate the opioid crisis. Talk with you Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Governor Andrew Cuomo says it's not a priority for him to get a climate action bill in the next 2 weeks because what he has seen is he thinks unrealistic, not really doable. He wants something feasible. So essentially, we're probably not going to see New York State action this year unless something changes dramatically in the next couple of weeks. And one other point from Sue Hugh Smith before we get to our more phone calls, which is that during our brief break, you brought up a point that led me to think, boy, I wish I had the audio. But a lot of people have been sharing the audio this week of something that was probably 5-6 years old. It's a conservative commentator, Ben Shapiro, and I'm not going to quote in bad faith here. This is something he actually said. I mean, it's such a bad take that you're going to think that I'm butchering it, but he's not. This is what he actually said unironically. He said, even if you grant all of the stuff about climate change, sea level rise. He said, let's say oceans rise 5-10 feet. 5-10 feet. He says, what we're talking about is it's not going to happen overnight. And the people who live, if you've got a house on the water, you're going to move. You're going to pick up and you're going to move to somewhere that's not on the water. And you've got time, and that's what people are going to do. And he joked that basically it's California coastal liberals who are going to have to now move to the San Fernando Valley. Mm-hmm. And he said, it's not going to happen overnight, and that's what's going to happen, even if they're right about climate change. I mean, it's such a sort of demonstrably bad take that it's the kind of thing that would sort of get laughed out of a middle school class. And this is a guy with millions of Twitter followers, but that's not the point. The point is, his view was, even if the 5 to 10 feet of sea level rise, no big deal. He's got a house. Well, talk to the people, Ben, on Lake Ontario right now who are dealing with water levels. I mean, it's not easy to pick up your life. I mean, it's easy when you make gobs of money to think, well, that's easy. Mm-hmm. But that's not everybody. And we're talking about millions of people around the world. And I just bring that up because that clip, which is easily findable, it's been widely shared, is an example that even when people concede some of the science, mm-hmm. they don't think it's going to be that bad.
Sure. And it's a huge problem. I mean, 5 to 10 feet of sea level rise is hundreds of millions of people, which means those people push into areas, whether it's short-term or long-term, or however you want to define that, people are going to be pushing into other areas, other countries often, and that destabilizes those regions or potentially destabilizes those regions politically. There's certainly are lots of examples of that climate-induced migrations already happening, and one would anticipate that that will continue to accelerate. So that's a huge problem. I heard a statistic this week that the U.S., for example, has planted half of the corn, half the corn that we usually do. Now, you could argue maybe we'll eat less meat and that'll be good for us and all of that. But these have global implications when we are talking about staple food products not being able to be planted. It's not like, oh, well, we'll plant them in 2 weeks. No, we're getting close to the point at which there's no point in planting corn for the year. Half of it might not go in the ground. That has implications. There are roads that are literally melting in India right now. People are going to die because it's too hot. So, you know, when we talk about climate change and it ending human civilization, that isn't hyperbole. It's not people being, you know, just a little extra, whatever, you know, excitable. It's realistic. Is that the future you want? As a parent and as an educator who, you know, yesterday my son wanted to talk for about 3 hours about an article that he read about the very possible reality of a 3 to 4 degree temperature rise, Celsius temperature rise on this planet. What does that world look like? By 2050, he will be 50 in 2050. That isn't some faraway thing. That's his adulthood. And that's it's a painful conversation to have. And I would like to be having, oh, no, don't worry, because our politicians are putting these policies in place and we're moving rapidly towards this transition. But I've been waiting for that for 30 years. And I would like to see the state of New York start actually moving towards solving this problem. And you're not going to solve it until you say, we are not going to have more gas expansion. We are not going to keep investing in more fossil fuels. And instead, we're going to direct all of this money into adapting and changing. And guess what? It's going to be good for us.
Mark Dunley, I am not saying, by the way, that Ben Shapiro, let me just grant one point. We are going to see a requirement as time goes on that some people living in some coastal areas, whatever body of water, can't probably live there. There's going to be some required movement of people. But the idea that it's easy or that it's, you know, that there isn't a cost or that it's only about, well, you used to live here, now you live here, as opposed to saying that's coupled with food shortages and all these other problems. I would like to be sitting next to you when you watch that clip for the first time, if you haven't seen it, just to kind of see what happens.
Well, I mean, you know, the Pentagon for probably more than a decade at this point has said that, you know, climate change is the greatest threat to national security, far greater than, you know, say, terrorism. You look at the situation in Syria. Syria was ignited because of climate change. The historic drought forced, you know, people off the agricultural land into the cities. And they, of course, had many other problems at that point, but the climate change sort of ignited that civil unrest and then put millions of people on the move into Europe, which created tremendous refugee crises. That was a couple of million. You know, when you start talking about a couple of hundred million or even a billion, that becomes even more disruptive. And we also have the problem that right now we're in the midst of the sixth great extinction of species in the history of the planet. You know, pretty much consensus, at least half of the species will disappear within the next, you know, 50 years or so, and it could be worse. Well, we're dependent upon those species for, you know, the web of life. And, you know, when the insects disappear, when the bees disappear, you know, the plants don't grow properly, so our food supply, you know, goes. You're looking at real fights over land, real fights over food. You're looking at, you know, heat waves. You know, last decade in Europe one summer, 70,000 people died in a heat wave. Now, they've learned better how to deal with those heat waves, but our quality of life is going down pretty rapidly, and there's still some time that we can change it and leave a better life to our children. As I said earlier, I think our children are the ones who finally, we've taken some of the children with us when we lobby. And to be honest, a lot of legislators actually seem to wake up when you get these 14-year-olds telling them that what they are doing is inadequate. You have to do something. I wish the governor spent more time with teenagers and had them explain to him why what he is doing is not adequate.
Glenn on Canisius Lake next on the phone. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, so I just wanted to chime in. I totally agree with what you guys are talking about. We're really walking into uncharted territory here. We don't know what the effects are going to be of all these, you know, everything you guys have been talking about, because we've had nothing to study over the years. You know, a lot of the arguments that people give when it comes to climate change is they say, hey, this is a cyclical event, but we're talking, you know, thousands and thousands of years over geologic time, and what supposedly that we have changed in, you know, within 100 or 200 years since the Industrial Revolution. Those changes occurred in a fraction of the time that, you know, these cycles occurred back over the whole history of the planet. Now, there's also other ways that seemingly we have tried to tackle this, you know, global warming, which is, you know, can be a misnomer when you think about it. You know, this is climate change. When we have our colder winters, people are saying, hey, where's the global warming, you know? And but actually what they're not realizing is this warming is occurring more or less at the poles only. You're talking about sea level rate, you know, rising. We're talking liquid water now, not solid water. When you add more liquid water to the planet, the next phase change of that is evaporating into water vapor, doing nothing but giving the atmosphere more potential energy for getting more extreme hurricanes, more extreme hots, more extreme colds, and all that stuff. So see the outbreaks of tornadoes and five hurricanes and everything, we're only seeing the beginning of what these changes are going to be. And like I said, it's uncharted territory, and before you know it, it's going to be over for us humans. And like you just said, no insects, no humans, no plankton, no humans. It's a bottom-up effect in the food chain.
Glenn, thank you for that. Mark, I want to start with you on this, because I'm thinking about what Glenn is describing, which is the results of climate change happening, you know, significantly and directly to communities. We've got people who have got flooding on Lake Ontario, and I realize that is a complex set of reasons for that. What I trust is that scientists who say that what climate change brings is more moisture in the atmosphere, which is greater precipitation events. So a 12-inch snowfall might be an 18-inch snowfall, and a 1-inch rainfall might be a 2-inch rainfall. And that has an accumulation over time. But what you inevitably find, Mark, are some people who will say, oh, well, no, the reason the water levels are high is not because of climate change, it's the government. It's all, you know, I'm not sure we're ever going to have, and maybe I'm being cynical, a situation where the effects of climate change, we have a population agreement that what we're seeing are the effects of climate change.
Well, it depends how bad it got. I mean, for instance, I don't think anybody in Puerto Rico who had, half that population, which is part of the United States, you know, went without electricity and water for 6 months, don't believe in the reality of climate change. And, yeah, maybe the first or second or third, you know, extreme weather event that takes place in your community, you can be dismissive of it. But, you know, when it starts going on for a decade or more, people begin to wake up. I mean, and also the reality is that most people actually do agree that climate change is a serious problem. It's actually more of a problem among our politicians and some of the corporate-owned media than it is among the general population. What the bigger problem has been, even though the polls show very strong awareness of the reality of climate change, it has traditionally been, you know, if you ask them to rank 20 issues, it comes in at number 17 or 18, and, you know, the economy, you know, always comes in first. That is beginning to change, and we saw that just, you know, last week in Europe, where the Greens, you know, surged across the various countries because climate change is becoming much more of a political issue. And, you know, they view the Green Party as being much closer. And a lot of the traditional mainstream parties in Europe really, you know, are on their last legs. It's going to be slow. I've always thought that perhaps we finally, you know, get the population to believe or to get the politicians to believe when we lose a major city. I mean, I lived in Brooklyn when Hurricane Sandy occurred. That was, you know, touch and go for a while, getting, you know, New York City back on its feet. And there's still communities in that city that are not back on the feet. But that subway system was a miracle that it got back running, you know, 10 days. But our system is much more fragile, the infrastructure, than people realize. And some of these extreme weather events, you know, you're going to have communities not recovering from that. And I think that's going to, you know, wake people up. The problem with politicians is that they, you know, they just think about the next election. They don't think good about 10, 15, 20 years out. And that's why we're saying, okay, Governor Cuomo, you want to argue how fast we can go to 100%? Fine, let's argue how fast, what can we add next year, 2 years from now, and 3 years from now, and let's hold you accountable for hitting those goals.
Okay. What do you think, Sue?
I absolutely agree. You know, the governor and the quote you started with was, well, I don't want to, you know, vote for anything that's, you know, not realistic. Well, then what does he think is realistic? You know, what are the policies that have to happen to get a 5% increase in renewable generation next year and a 5% transition to electric cars next year and a 5% switch to heat pumps next year? And let's get those mechanisms in place and start moving the dial. We are one of the, if New York State was a country, we'd be one of the wealthiest countries on the planet. And yes, it's not equally distributed, and that's its own topic that we need to deal with. But there's no lack of money, there's no lack of knowledge, there's no lack of technology. We just need to get the policies in place and start moving in the right direction.
Meanwhile, I get tweets like this from Mark saying, driving around, have Evan Dawson on, they're talking climate change. The disconnect from reality and the surety that I would be the one disconnected is staggering, but meanwhile, it's 50 degrees in June. Mm-hmm. Mark, you know how big this planet is, Mark? It's 50 degrees where you are. I don't mean to be rude here. It's 50 degrees where you are. And your conclusion is, all this talk about climate change must be ridiculous. Think for a minute about people who can't get food in some places where it's 20 degrees warmer than it used to be all the time, or where roads are melting in India. Ask Australia how their summers have gone. What are you going to say when it's 98 degrees in next month? Why do we get sidetracked with stuff? Why am I letting it get me riled up? I'm sorry, Mark. I'm sorry, and I'm sorry to the person who mentioned me on Twitter. I shouldn't let that get me riled up. It's just that, boy, do we have a continuing disconnect here. Sorry about that. Jane, next on the phone. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, Evan. I guess I'm going to be pessimistic in a way. Every day, I think about Lake Ontario, living and moving to Pittsburgh. It would reside in Rochester. I'm thinking, you know, with flooding and everything, it really scares me. I don't think the goals are too high because of what we're trying to rescue our lives. And another thing that really concerns me is when we make all these changes, the quality of life going down, somebody said, the poor can't do that. We have no place to fall. If the sacrifices are not shared, and that's where my pessimism really comes from, then I think we might not make the goals. But I think Andrew Cuomo is running for office, and he's careful with his donor class. But I always thought that, and I was always told that if you really believe in your goal, you will find a way. And it's that serious that we must find a way, and we all have to be more or less on board, and that means privileged people may end up with a great deal less privilege, and that concerns me. But the poor, we can't forget the poor, because we won't survive at all. We have nothing to give up. Thank you.
Jane, thank you. Mark Dunley, go ahead.
We certainly need to pay attention to the poor, and, you know, with the CCPA, I think it's a historical legacy. will be that it is address issues of environmental justice and low and moderate income people as needing to be dealt with in the climate change. We also have to deal with labor. The reality is a lot of unions are skeptical about the concept of a Green New Deal or even a just transition. The New York State OFF Act, which is the bill I helped write for 100% by 2030, we guarantee workers in that bill who are displaced from the fossil fuel industry their current wages and a new job. I think is really critical to make sure that the transition to a renewable energy future doesn't just benefit the wealthy. And there's certainly the real possibility that there's going to be a lot of money spent, and it could go mainly to the 1%, 2%. I think we need a much more, participatory process. I think we saw that with the Yellow Vest protest in France, which started off initially about a carbon tax at the French government, but really was more of a concept. They didn't believe the French president was really committed to their well-being. And we need to make sure that the transition to a clean energy future, is protecting everybody and lifting everybody up, which we think is right possible, but there's a lot of skepticism.
Well, and by the way, breaking news, it's actually 76 in Rochester, ain't 50. Mm-hmm. So I guess that means there's one more person listening right now who now believes in climate change, just based on the weather by the hour. So congratulations, Mark. Thanks for getting on the train. But I will also say, and I don't mean to be snarky, but here's why I get kind of fired up. As the host of this program, listeners have no idea if I think Mark Dunley is a loon or is he a genius. But I want to listen to Mark because he's studied and worked on this for a long time, and the science is there. Sue Hugh Smith, I don't know if my ideas for policy line up with hers or not. I'm the host of this program. What I'm trying to do is listen to where the real debate needs to be, which is what policy should be. There's a lot of possible policies. Science, there's not like a world of science that we could just choose from at our discretion or based on what temperature it is or what hour it is and what city you're in. Mm-hmm. The science is the science. The question is, what does the policy need to be? And that is debatable. And that's why we're debating it. Governor Cuomo's debating it. Joe Morelli's debating it. Sue Hugh Smith from the RPCC is debating it. Mark Dunley from the Green Education Legal Fund. It's a public conversation about where our priorities need to be. But it's not based on what temperature it is or what hour. Come on, dude. David writes this and says, have your guests installed solar panel systems on their own homes? Speaking of walking the talk, I'm a lifelong Republican. I installed 26 panels for about $22,000 last year. Sue?
I'm so glad he did install solar panels. And, I think the last time I was on this show, my friend and colleague, Andrew, pointed out that this conversation really shouldn't be about what those of us who can afford to do have done. It should be a much broader conversation than that because, quite frankly, if the 10 to 20% of us that can afford to make these changes, it'll be good. It'll make a difference, but it won't be transformative. But yes, I have both installed a geothermal heat pump in my house, not personally, but I've had a great guy do it. And we have solar panels on our house, and I drive an electric car. And we're not done. And I would encourage everyone, if they could possibly imagine, whether you are a renter or a homeowner or a business owner, what is your path to carbon-free living by 2030? Make yourself a plan. What are the barriers? Identify what they are, and then we can start working on addressing those barriers and let your political leaders know what are those barriers to you achieving that.
Mark Dunley, you want to answer David on Twitter? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I agree a lot with Sue just said, but, one of the things a lot of us are trying to do is get more community solar. I happen to live in a forest. I built my house super insulated and myself and passed the solar, but I have too many trees to put active solar on it. So we're trying to hook up with the local community solar farm, which anybody can join. You don't have to put any money up front. And in fact, you will should be able to lower your electric bills. And I know that Sue, I'm also involved with this here in the Capital District, is trying to do community choice aggregation, where you basically get everybody in the community, once the community votes to join the CCA, to buy their electricity together and basically to buy 100% clean electricity. And, you won't save a lot of money, but you will save money. Mm-hmm. while also creating a market for developing a more renewable energy moving forward.
As we close the program, hey, Mark, who I was kind of venting at a little, send me an email. I owe you an apology. I don't mean to be that fired up. It's just that when this program ends, I'm going to go pick up my 7-year-old from school. And I do think about his generation and the future generations a lot. And so it's a debate about what we all are looking at the options that are on the table. So I want to thank our guests for taking the time. Mark Dunley, Executive Director of the Green Education and Legal Fund. Mark, always good. Thank you for taking the time for us.
Thank you, Evan.
Sue Hughes-Smith, Rochester People's Climate Coalition. If you'd like to get more involved with that, because occasionally we get questions on what that actually means, real briefly, where can people find you?
Oh, at Sue, S-U-E, at ROCPCC.org.
And the website for RPCC, it's RPCC.org?
Yeah, Rochester People's Climate Coalition.org.
Okay, you can learn a lot more there. Thanks as always.
Yeah, thank you, Evan.
Thanks for being here. Don, thanks for great work with us behind the glass as a volunteer. And Rob Braden, the best engineer in this city, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a beautiful afternoon, no matter the temperature. And I'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.